You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
I know people are running around doing their last-minute Mother's Day shopping, and I just want to tell them all, don't stress. Voyage AC has the most beautiful, elegant gifts imaginable.
Not that I was one of them, but is there anything in particular you'd like for Mother's Day?
Oh, honey, you're getting me a Mother's Day present?
Maybe.
You are the absolute best. And yes, I swoon for anything jasmine cocoa, candles, diffusers, or perfume. Voyage AC is your destination for the perfect Mother's Day gift. Gorgeous candles and so many other gifts like beachwear, diffusers, glamorous masks, face and body products. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
Yep. All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
And this episode is sponsored by Cute Booty Lounge.
Hey, I know we were just talking about Mother's Day. And for the mom in your life that needs to go from loungy to active to out for the evening, you need to check out Cute Booty Lounge.
So if someone, I'm not saying who, were to get something for you there, what would you suggest?
Is this the same someone that was getting me something earlier?
No, not at all.
If you were to get me anything from Cute Booty Lounge, I would be beyond thrilled to get the elevated booty leggings. They really shape your booty and hold everything in place while still being the most comfortable, well-fitting leggings I've ever owned. Cute Booty Lounge is made right here in the USA by women for women. The company is female and minority owned, and they have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. There's a cute booty style for everyone. Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body. Love your booty.
And make it even sweeter, head over to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
That is sweet.
Yep. Head to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
My name is Karen Brailsford, and I am the only one helping people mend their broken hearts. Really hold a vision of a world that works for everyone, that's inclusive, that it's accepting, that is really about the truth, and which is recognizing that we're all part of this oneness, this thing that I call it God, or some people might call it source energy. We each get to express uniquely and dynamically, whether it's as our sex or our race or the culture, but in the end, we are all one.
What if, as a child, you were drawn to the church, not necessarily by what was being preached from the pulpit, but by the music and the spirit that you felt and heard while you were there? Karen Brailsford, author, spiritual guide, and intuitive creator, was always a seeker and found herself on many different career paths throughout her life, but never gave up hope that there was something out there for her that would take her back to that feeling from her childhood. But what would you do if you were called to take a job helping people heal their grief? Would you decide to put it off and continue looking for your purpose elsewhere? Or would you say yes to the job and write a book to help others align with the divine wherever they are? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all too familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. So today we are talking to Karen Brailsford. Hi, Karen. Really happy to have you here on the show. Again, we actually really made several attempts to interview Karen back in November, and technology was not on our side, and we would start and stop. And so she has been gracious enough to come back and allow us to interview her today, because we just think her story is so important. Karen, can you tell me, who was your first celebrity crush?
I think it might have been Sammy Davis Jr. when I was a little girl and I used to tap dance. I wanted to be a tap dancer like Sammy.
Awesome. That is awesome. And did you have one as a teenager?
As a teenager, I had a crush on Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. And then recently, after watching that documentary on the Bee Gees, I was reminded of how much I loved Andy Gibb,
yes.
Yeah, we just watched that.
Yeah, that's such a good documentary, right?
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I actually texted my sister and asked her, wait, was it me who had the crush on Andy, or did you love Andy? She's like, you loved Andy. I'm like, that's right.
Well, it with good reason, too. He was so talented. Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's interesting. I still feel a bit of a pang when I think about his the loss of him, his transition, and how he died. A few celebrities who resonate with me that way, and he's one of them.
Mm-hmm. It was so misunderstood at the time, too, you know?
Yes.
What they were going through.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that so many of them had died. I thought that they were all still alive, except for Andy.
No, and that's what was so insightful. And that documentary took me back to, I guess, what, was I a teenager? Mm-hmm. You know, when that album first came out. So, it was really, really insightful. And I love watching anything about creativity and how something is made and how one opens up to the universe and allows these rhythms or words to come through. And that was really well presented in that documentary.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it is a definite recommend. Do you remember what it's called?
It's the Bee Gees documentary.
Yeah. We're calling it. All right. Well, thank you for that trip through your life. Starting with Sammy Davis Jr. and then Michael Jackson and then Andy Gibb reborn.
Yes.
I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, but I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. So today, as I said, we are talking to Karen Brailsford. Karen is an author, a spiritual guide, an intuitive creator. Her debut book, Sacred Landscapes of the Soul, Aligning with the Divine Wherever You Are, was released in 2020. Karen is a Yale graduate and a licensed spiritual practitioner with the Agape International Spiritual Center in Los Angeles and the coordinator of its pastoral care ministry. She is also a literary agent with the Avitas Agency. Karen has worked on the staff of Newsweek, Elle, People, In Touch, and E! Entertainment. She is the mother of actress Amanla Stenberg and has acted as her de facto manager for years, employing the expertise she gleaned from interviewing Hollywood celebrities, like the ones we just mentioned, and covering Fashion Week and negotiating with publicists.
So welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, this is a long time coming, but I think this is the perfect time to talk about this subject, actually. So, you know, there's that thing, this is happening when it's supposed to, this interview. And so I'm just going to start by asking you how you identify.
How do I identify? I identify as a being. I identify as the I Am presence. I identify as African-American and a woman.
Thank you for that. And then you live in Los Angeles, where Scott and I live, but you grew up in the Bronx. Is that right?
I did. I grew up in the South Bronx in the 70s when the Bronx was burning down, if you remember.
What's the difference between the Bronx and the South Bronx?
The South Bronx has always been held up as this center of poverty and just about any negative thing you can think of. And in the 70s, it literally was burning on fire. And now there's a bit of a turnaround. And it was, when I grew up, it was predominantly Black, as we said then, and Puerto Rican. And now, I remember a few years ago, I was visiting and I kept looking around and looking at all these different white people that were getting off the subway stop at Brook Avenue. So gentrification is happening there, as it is, you know, in our major cities and in those neighborhoods that poor people have been relegated to. But now that apartments and land is so pricey, there's this influx of people to the detriment sometimes of the people who've stayed there and lived there all these years. So that's what's happening in the South Bronx. I think at one point I used to be a little, I never would say the South Bronx, but now I proudly say, yeah, I'm from the South Bronx.
Yes, you're claiming it.
I'm claiming it. I'm claiming it, exactly.
And there's a lot of good hip hop that came from the South Bronx.
Oh, yes. That was, I remember going to 40 Park, and that was, you know, before Rapper's Delight, before rap took off. It was really created there. I remember going to parks in the summer and hearing DJ Scratch, and yes, a number of my friends, you know, were really familiar with, or went to high school with a number of folks who became big in the rap movement. So I was there then. And now you're dating me, but okay.
Right.
we're dating one another, so.
You dated yourself when you said your first crush was.
I know, exactly. Sammy Davis Jr. Yes, yes, yes.
You took me back.
I was three.
I know. So great. So going with that same vibe, because you write about this in your book, and this is actually one of my favorite parts. Talk to me about the Fort Mott Church and what that community and that culture was like and what it was like for you.
When I was about 9, my maternal grandmother died, and my mother promised her that she would get us involved with the church. That it was very important to my grandmother that we go to church. And so we found a small Baptist church in the South Bronx, and it's called Fort Mott Baptist Church. And Fort Mott is a city in South Carolina, and the church was named for the birth town, birthplace of the founding minister, Reverend James Goodwine. And I'm not making that up. His name was James Goodwine, which I love the idea of there being this communion happening, wine in that sense. And so I grew up in Fort Mott, which was a small church. It still exists. My sister's on the trustee board.
Wow.
She still attends. It's a storefront church. And it was a place where I really witnessed the Spirit of God revealing itself in this very dynamic way, in which literally people will become filled with the Holy Spirit, with the Holy Ghost. And one of those individuals included my mother. And my mother, who made her transition in 97, was a very proper and prim somewhat in the way she appeared. Mm-hmm. So I always knew that there is no way she would be stretched out, slain on the floor, you know, if she could help it. You know, she would not want to be seen that way. But every now and again, she would just let loose and say these amazing things and prophecies, and would be guided to, you know, lay hands or to call out the name of someone in the congregation who might have been sick at the time, but then would experience a healing. So I knew from an early age that this was real, that there was something powerful that existed and that one could tap into it. Now, I always wanted to tap into it for myself. And so that never happened while I was there. It happened much later, but that's what I witnessed at Fort Mott. And mm-hmm. that's where my foundation was formed, was created. And I am so grateful to, you know, Reverend James Goodwine and all of the many sisters and brothers and wonderful people there who kind of created this nurturing place for me to grow into my own spirituality and to find God for myself.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Growing up, I always wanted to be close to God. Mm-hmm. I guess I wanted a piece of that, you know, that action that I had witnessed for myself. And so at the top of my New Year's resolutions list would be closer to God. And whatever that looked like, I was open to. And so that was always my goal, you know. So
I love the image of you in an all black storefront church, where, you know, maybe it starts off as a simmer, the energy, and then it gets to this boil where people are so connected with the spirit that they lose control of their bodies, right? They are writhing on the floor. They are calling out. They are then vessels, really, is what's happening, right?
Exactly. That's a perfect description of it. Yeah, it was so powerful. And it just, I mean, it left such an imprint. It's interesting because what I think it did for me is that I felt as if I didn't have to start at square one, so to speak. I know a number of people who look upon their childhood experiences in churches in a really negative way. Right. They have been hurt by, maybe they were rejected because of their sexuality or for whatever reason, or they didn't feel that the church really embodied the principles that one might call Christian. In this case, you know, this was a Baptist church, so it was a Christian church. Or some people just never grew up knowing anything about God or knowing anything about what it was. And so I started at a place of knowing that there was something. Mm-hmm. And that there was something worth opening up to and trying to find. And in that moment, at that time, I thought I had to seek it out. I probably would word it, or I look at it a little differently now. So I started from a point of knowing that there was something to believe in. Now, how people define that something, you know, that was open to interpretation and my own personal journey and growth towards and expansion into and surrender unto. Yeah. But it really gave me this foundation of knowing that there was something, and I was determined to seek it out.
And you did. So then I'm fast forwarding years later to 1995. Is that when you got to Agape?
It must have been 1995, which is a year after I arrived in Los Angeles.
Can you first just tell us what Agape is?
Agape is a spiritual center. It's now located, we operate out of the Saban Theater in Beverly Hills. But of course, because of COVID, that's not really happening. So we are online and we reach, you know, we span the globe in terms of the folks who are tuning into our live streaming services and the many, many offerings that we have, from a crisis support clinic that meets once a week to a Friday night gathering. And when I say the globe, I really mean the globe, you know, mm-hmm. Europe and Asia and all over the world. And so Agape itself, the word means love, that God love. And the center was founded by Michael Bernard Beckwith, and he continues to be the good shepherd and mm-hmm. is always evolving, expanding and teaching. And that's exactly what's happening right now, especially now during this time, 2020, yeah. into 2021, as we are seeking just to really hold a vision of a world that works for everyone, a vision of a world that's inclusive, that it's accepting, that it's not about partisanship, that is really about the truth, and which is recognizing that we're all part of this oneness, this thing that I call it God, or some people might call it source energy, but that we are all part of this, and that this idea of different races or there being these differences, of course, you know, we each get to express uniquely and dynamically, whether it's as our sex or our race or the culture, but in the end, we are all one. Mm-hmm. And it's our differences that makes this this oneness so rich and so deep and so divine. So that's Agape.
Agape is non-denominational, is that correct?
Exactly. We like to say we're trans-denominational, that we go across the different denominations. Right. So yes, everyone is there, you know, white, Black, Asian, you know, Latino, race, creed, you know, mm-hmm. genders. And we invite everyone.
I've actually never been, but I know a bunch of people because we live in Los Angeles where the Agape Center is. People go and they say that it's packed. Is that your experience?
That's definitely true. That was true, you know, especially when we were in the building. It's jam-packed with people of all ages because it's a really rich and welcoming environment. I mean, I can't remember if it was King who said that the most racially divided place in America is the church on a Sunday morning. And that's the opposite is true at Agape. Beckwith happens to be African-American. We have a number of ministers who are different, you know, sexes and races. And so it's a very inclusive, loving field of awareness and expansion.
So tell me about getting to Agape.
Well, it's funny because I actually first heard about Agape from an acupuncturist. I know this is LA and this was in the 90s, you know, when I was just learning about acupuncture and all kinds of alternative healing methods, although acupuncture is very much accepted now, right? But I think in the mid 90s, I don't think it was as common, at least
out there.
Yeah, at least not for my East Coast friends. But anyway, so I went to the acupuncturist, and while on her table, she inserted the needles. And when she inserted the needles, I felt this energy move through me. And I thought, that's so interesting. I believe she left the room. And then I started singing spontaneously. Basically, I had the kinds of experience that I had witnessed at Fort Mott as a kid. I was singing spontaneously, and these songs were coming through me. And I remember there were three songs, and I don't remember which songs, but they were three songs that I had grown up singing at Fort Mott. Mm. So this made for me this connection between what was happening on this acupuncturist table with this energy, and then what happened, you know, what I witnessed in a Baptist church. And so when the acupuncturist came back into the room, You know, I had been chanting and, you know, just shaking and moving, you know, uncontrollably. Luckily, I didn't fall off the table because in a Baptist church, when that happens, which is always really, was really kind of fun to see, is that, you know, once someone would get the spirit and you lose all control, these ushers clad in white nurses, uniforms, basically would rush over and they'd move the chairs and they'd have the fans and they'd be fanning you and making sure that you didn't hurt yourself. So luckily I didn't have that with me in that room. So luckily I wasn't writhing too wildly, but I was singing. Mm-hmm. And she came into the room and I said to her, so do you work with spirit? And she explained to me that that's what she does, but she didn't usually share that with people. You know, they just expected some needles to go in. But basically I would describe it now, what she probably was doing was holding space and that she would be communicating with your spirit guides. This made me realize, oh, this quote unquote new agey kind of thing, you know, this woo woo thing of acupuncture is related somehow to what happens in those churches when one quote unquote gets slain in the spirit. So I asked her, I said to her, you know, it's funny because I'm feeling called to go to a church, but I don't know where to go. I'd happened to have had a series of car accidents right before I went to see her. And the last one was so bizarre and it wasn't my fault. And I just felt like literally felt as if the universe was tapping me on my shoulder, trying to get my attention. And she said, oh, I go to this place called Agape. So I went to Agape, and the very first time I was there, I was just amazed by the warmth and the love and the diversity. And at one point, I was seated and people were standing up around me and singing and clapping. And I did not want to stand up. Like my mother, I don't necessarily want to call attention to myself in certain situations. And so I was perfectly content to sit down. And I heard this voice from within me say, stand up. So I'm like, oh goodness. So I stood up and then I started moving and not quite writhing, but, you know, crying and kind of shouting. And I remember there was this couple seated in front of me and I'm like, and I was aware of what I was doing. So to explain it, there's an awareness of what one is doing. And I suppose if one really wanted to, you could make it stop. But there was an awareness. And I remember apologizing as I'm moving to the people in front of me. I'm so sorry. And this woman says, don't worry, baby. You know, you just got the spirit. I was like, okay. And what I realized, you know, later subsequently was that there's not much of that going on at Agape. There's not much. People are clapping and dancing and we are, you know, it's really fun experience there. But my sense is that people aren't quote unquote getting slain in the spirit. So I really felt a bit self-conscious doing this, but it was something that clearly my spirit wanted me to do. And so that made me think, okay, I guess I found my church. Well, being human and being the person of rebellion that I can be, the next Sunday, I remember thinking, oh, I don't feel like going back there. I'm just going to stay in bed. And I literally heard something say, Karen, get up. Michael has a message for you. So I like was dressed in 5 minutes out the door and I started going to Agape on a regular basis and deciding it was time to really listen to what my inner voice was telling me and not be in resistance. So that's how I ended up at first attending the services and then taking classes and took a hiatus at one point. Didn't feel compelled to go every Sunday. And I do believe in this ebb and flow of where one is supposed to be. And I remember one Sunday I woke up, I had a dream about Reverend Michael in which we were just talking in the sanctuary. And that I woke up with the thought, I need to go back today. And that's when I really started taking the courses towards becoming a practitioner. And I became licensed in 2009. And voila, here I am. So,
you know what I love so much about everything that you've told me so far is that, yes, you're getting these messages, but you're listening to them. People get all kinds of messages all the time. Don't date that guy. It's bad for you. People don't listen, you know, like, don't go there. Don't take that job. But you're listening to these messages that you're getting and then you're acting on it.
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, I wonder if you're giving me a little too much credit because I remember when I spoke to Reverend Michael, I guess about a year ago this time, just before I took on this position on staff, he said something about listening and then he said, and obeying. So once you listen, I have to honestly say, I don't always obey or there's some resistance. Yeah. I mean, I finally you know, that's, I mean, the idea that I had this wonderful experience one Sunday and the next Sunday, I'm like, I think I'll just stay home. So
you identify that as your humanness, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm very human that way. But I must say, in the end, I do always listen because it's so much easier. It's so much, life flows so much better. But my sense of what I call God in you and as you, some of the passages in Sacred Landscapes of the Soul are written in the voice of God as letters to me, as letters to the world, and God in you and as you. So I think that I have this sense that the voice of God, the spirit, is so loving. It's not at all the God of the Old Testament. And it's not a Santa Claus either. It's not like, you know, you did wrong and I'm going to punish you. I mean, I've had these dialogues with spirit in which it's just so open and so available. And if I ever think I hear harshness, I know that's not really God, because God does not speak that way. It's only about love, and it's only about being right where you are. So there's this dance that's always happening in terms of how I interact with this presence. And I think you're absolutely right what you said about people, how one always gets messages. And I do believe that. I do believe it's like this broadcast, you know, imagine, you know, that this tower, and it's always broadcasting, and it's up to us. And it's always broadcasting in ways that we individually can understand. You know, someone who's a scientist might see formulas. I'm not a scientist. So I hear songs, or, you know, spirit speaks to me in images. And so I just think it's so amazing how there's an infinite number of ways that God does speak to people. And yes, and yes, this is for everyone. And it is speaking. I say it, I don't usually use, sometimes I use the she, the feminine, but most often my go-to is the neuter it. I think it speaks to everyone, and it's always speaking, and it's up to us individually to catch what is being said and to cultivate that unique relationship for ourselves.
Thank you for that. I love all of that. And I was just thinking how different the accomplishments on your bio, the Yale grad, the, you know, the staff at Newsweek and Ellen People, how different that kind of cerebral existence is from the spiritual existence you're talking about now. And I know they're both incorporated in you, because you're still that person as well. But the way that you live now feels like, well, actually, we're going to get into that, because you said that it was about a year ago when you took this role, right?
Yes, I started on staff at Agape in February.
Wow.
Just before, I had about a month or 6 weeks or so in the office before all of a sudden everyone was working from home. So yes.
Right. So February 2020, can you tell us what the position is called?
I am the coordinator for One from the Heart, which is the pastoral care ministry. Mm-hmm. And pastoral care entails supporting the congregants and supporting individuals who are going through all kinds of things, whether it's grief or crises. We have a number of different ministries. We have a bereavement support group. We have an animal support group for those who have lost a pet family member. We have a crisis support clinic that I helped to launch on Zoom that meets once a week, in which folks can sign up for a mini counseling session, complimentary, for 20 minutes and actually meet in a breakout room on Zoom with a spiritual practitioner as licensed by Agape. So, you know, before COVID, we were actually going into the hospitals and convalescent homes and showing up at memorials to support, to hold vigil, to pray with individuals. So it's the caretaking arm of the spiritual center.
Scott and I were watching the news, which is, I always watch the news, but we were watching some program, and there was she was a chaplain, I think, going to help families.
Oh, in the one in the hospital.
Yeah, helping, she was walking. She was in full like hazmat gear.
She was helping going from families bed to bed. Transition.
Oh, wonderful. Wow. Wow. That's powerful. What a powerful image.
What a powerful image. And she was there with some people that were transitioning, and with some families where their loved one was about to transition. And then there were people who had transitioned and she was just there with the families. And
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yes, we have a transition support team. And curiously enough, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I became involved with the group that would, I think there were a couple of individuals who were attending Agape at the time, but it wasn't an Agape affiliated concern. And so I had the honor of going into, it was a hospice, Carl Bean Hospice. And we would go in and we would be with people as they were transitioning. And it was, what was so interesting about that work was to see, I became very aware that individuals seemed to have some sort of choice about when they were transitioning, because it really did seem that certain individuals would wait for a certain person to arrive before they were able to fully surrender. And then others would really wait for the families to leave and go get a cup of coffee or go home. And then they would take their last breath. So I was always aware of that. And that actually helped prepare me in 1997 when my own mother made her transition. I was there with her, and something similar happened in terms of the choice and when. And it's really powerful to see. And with my mother, I was able to see that even as I was there with her when she took her last breath, and she was actually smiling and she was speaking. She had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and she was really young. I am about to approach her age when she transitioned.
Oh, wow.
And so she was really young and it came out of the blue. And she'd only been diagnosed really 3 months before, although we knew something was wrong, but a few months before that. And so what was interesting was that, first of all, it was such an honor to be present with her when she made her transition. It was, I mean, I really felt, I was the oldest daughter. I have a sister who's a year younger and then two younger brothers. And just because of a number of, you know, synchronistic, funny things, my not being able to reach them so they could come, I was there with her and I was holding her hand. And she literally smiled and looked at a point behind me and said, "I'm going home. I'm going home." And so I like to think that she, you know, saw, you know, maybe her own mother, you know, maybe Jesus, you know, because she was in such a place of surrender and smiling and peace and having these visions. And what was really powerful was that even after she said goodbye that way, took her last breath, the air was so thick with her energy and her presence for a few days. And then I could feel it dissipate, like in her room where all of this had happened. It was, you know, I think what I was saying earlier was that I feel so grateful that I've start from a point where I start of having this belief. But the truth is, I've seen so much tangible evidence, palpable evidence. And so, yes, my faith is deep, but I've actually seen things and heard things and witnessed things. And I think we are all capable of doing that, although I know it comes upon people in different ways. So to really feel that energy, once my mother had already taken her last breath, was to really realize, well, she's certainly more than this shell. And she really had become a shell. She had lost so much weight. In some ways, it made dealing with her death easier. But in other ways, I'm very much, you know, there were times when I would just cry and reach out into the, you know, into the air and just wish I could just touch her and hold her in that very palpable way. So much of that is happening now. So many people are experiencing this grief. And how does one mend a broken heart? I always felt at one point, I felt that, you know, her death, that it created this hole. And I always felt that this hole would never be filled again, but that I would be able to navigate life with the hole. I'm not quite sure where I am with that now. Certainly having my daughter be born a year later, certainly, you know, was so healing. So many people are going through so much grief right now. And I'm just so compassionate about that loss, that sense of loss.
Wow. I'm also struck by how you talked about kind of the beginning of your spiritual experience, beginning with watching your mother have that experience at Fort Mott, and then the gift and the honor that you described of being there as she transitioned, and that being just another piece of evidence for you, that feeling that energy in the room. I know what that feels like. that energy when someone has left and the energy is still there.
Yes, 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 absolutely. I mean, I do believe that we are energy and that, you know, we are to be honoring of these bodies that we choose to and that we choose to and get to inhabit for, you know, a transitory period of time. But ultimately, we are more than our bodies. And that's a powerful realization and, I guess, mandate and calling when one realizes that. So then we get to see beyond appearances. We get to see beyond someone's, you know, sexuality or gender, and to know that each moment there's this possibility of namaste, in which you literally get to honor this person and get to be honored by them, that each moment, each exchange with someone is a holy one. It's mm-hmm. it's one of communion, and that when we get to connect with people, even those people we may not want to connect with, I know there's been a calling, you know, at least at my spiritual center, to bless those individuals who might pop up on our television screens, and we might not feel so open to bless them. I'm not going to name any names, but to bless them and to really, you know, see the God in them, to see the truth about them.
Right. So it is everyone.
Yes, it's everyone. No one is special in that way. We all have that within us. Now, some people might be separated from it, their realization of it, but we are each God revealing itself.
So tell me, how might your support for someone who's grieving an animal family member be different than a person who is grieving a human family member that has transitioned?
I don't think it's at all different, actually. I'm thinking about someone called a week or so ago, and she called about her beloved dog. And I prayed with her, and in the same way I would pray about a person. I prayed about knowing that this particular dog's life was eternal, and blessing this dog and blessing her. And I mean, there's such grief. There's no doubt that this dog is a family member of hers, and very close to her. And so we understand that and we recognize that. And I had my own experience with losing a dog and what that felt like. And by the way, when we left, after we left the vet and we put him to sleep, I actually felt his energy, you know, pop up and like kind of like happily pad out of the veterinarian's office with us and hop into the back seat. So that energy, that spirit, and oh my gosh, Basil was around us for a long time. And once I remember, I've written about this, and once we pulled up to the house, and my daughter, who was really young at the time, was like, oh my goodness, I see Basil. So I don't know if there's a difference. Connection is there in terms of spirit, that Basil was there and I felt him, you know, around in the yard, and was able to communicate with him even after he'd left his body. So
it's really interesting.
Oh yeah. I think people have such connections, and even the way that this particular dog came to us. I've never had a dog before. Didn't grow up with pets, and he's the only dog that I've known. And it was such an instant connection. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that these wonderful animals come to us to be our teachers, to show us, to open our hearts. Certainly Basil opened my heart even more, and which is what, you know, our personal family relationships are about as well, right?
Okay.
We grow, we deepen, we expand.
Well, and sometimes those relationships that people have with their four-legged family members are preferable to a certain human.
So I think some people might find them easier, right? You know, they're a little easier to deal with. So I've heard that for certain. I know some people who are like, I prefer animals to people.
I have my whatever. In my mother's case, my birds, because my mother loves her birds. She has five. So you started this right before quarantine, but is your sense that this year has been a heavier year? It's been a more difficult year to do what you do?
I don't know if it's more difficult to do what I do. I really feel that, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that I literally felt, you know, literally received a call from the director of the ministry, Reverend Coco Stewart, an invitation to work with her in this ministry at that timing. So I feel this sense of like, oh, the universe brought me here at this time. And so I think that folks who study, who practice, meaning they meditate and they pray and they study and are always deepening their connection to spirit, I think, you know, that phrase, we have come for such a time as this, that really holds true. Like, that's the marquee blazing right now. We've come for such a time as this. And the only way that you can be prepared for such a time as this is to consistently and to continuously do the study, do the practice, to meditate, and to deepen. And so I feel very grateful and gratified that Agape offers so many ways that people can do this so that we can be strengthened and we can be a support for those who might appear to be floundering or to be suffering or don't know where to turn in this moment, because really it's about the practice.
Right. It's that preparing in times of peace for times of war.
Right. Just always, you know, always deepening, always really shoring up that connection to spirit.
Yes.
And that's the most important thing in order to be, in order to, you know, that whole idea of, you know, putting on the oxygen mask so that you can help the other person, you know, on the plane, you know, we apply that mask. Ha! Huh, literally, it's a mask, right? Oxygen mask.
Yes.
We, you know, we put that on by the practice of meditation and prayer and, you know, journaling, whatever, you know, and that's why I feel that Sacred Landscapes of the Soul, my book, which I've been writing over a period of time, and I don't think it's a coincidence that it too, you know, it was birthed in September of last year. And, you know, the passages are meant to be a balm and to be an inspiration and to be comforting for those who are going through these really incredible, and everyone, it almost seems cliched, but yes, unprecedented times.
And just another note about your book, which is beautiful and wonderful, and I hope everybody rushes out to get it who's listening right now. But this book, you can really start at any page. It doesn't have to be read linearly.
Exactly. I think it's actually more fun to read it, to just pick it up and see and flip to a page and see what you turn to. There's one person who calls me like at least once a week. She's been reading it every day. She reads a passage every day, but once or twice a week, she'll call me or text me and go, oh my God, you know, I was thinking about this and I was, you know, feeling frustrated about that. And then I opened to this page. And so each of the passages begins with an epigraph or quotation, and then it concludes with what I call a peak speak, which is an affirmation. So there's lots of depth there that you can read it on so many different levels. And yes, if you want, you can read it from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And I take the readers on this journey through these different landscapes. And the first landscapes have to deal with confinement, the forest and the plateau, and the tundra, and then gestation, which is where you're blooming. So there's the valley and the riverbank and the garden. And then the final three landscapes address the idea of expansion. There's the ocean and the mountaintop and vastness, in which you're feeling really connected. So I think in any given point in our lives, in any given day, we might traverse, you know, a few of these different landscapes. So the idea is just to, I think it is really ideal to open it up and to really be present with what you're going through in that moment, and maybe some cards. A friend of mine said it's almost like having, like those fortune telling cards or something like that. You just open it up. And then I think that the energy energetically, and I really imbued it with energy because the passages came to me energetically and were given to me through me. So I think that really jumps out off the page, as does the design. It's a pretty book with lots of color.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful.
I'm sure to pick it up then.
Yeah. Yes. He loves textures and color. So we're getting close to time. And thank you for taking us through your book, though, because it really is, knowing you the way that I do now, even more than I used to after this interview, you were the perfect person to have written this book because of the conduit that you have set yourself up to be, that you've opened yourself up to be. But I didn't want to touch on the way that I know you before we close, because I think
yes.
interesting. So I was a publicist and you were a reporter when we met, and we had our children the same year, right? Or I had Miles be first. I had Miles first, right?
What year? You had your 6 months before. So Mala was born in 98. Is Miles earlier?
Yes. And so it was February 98. Mm-hmm. And so you and I had our babies at the same time, which when you're friends with someone and you have a baby at the same time, there's a natural bond there anyway, a further bond. And we went out on a breastfeeding date. <It's so true. laughs> I love to talk about, you hadn't done it in public. I was like, let's go.
Yes, you were like, yes, you were my doula, my nursing doula.
And so we went out in public and breastfed our children, and so it went. And your daughter is quite remarkable in itself. We talked about her a little bit in your bio. Amanla is her name, and she was Rue in the Hunger Games. She did this video, which I have a copy of still, that made her a household name afterwards. It was an activism video. She's an activist. I want to say she's a civil rights activist. Is that how you describe her?
Does she describe herself that way? She would probably shy away from using the word activist at this point. But okay. I'm wondering, because actually, you know, other people describe her, which is kind of interesting. I wonder if she would even use that word anymore. Probably not. But yes, she's been called an activist. Yes. Social activist. Yes.
And I think that the word activist in this case just applies to somebody who's using their voice to action. You know, in The Hate U Give, which is an amazing movie, I feel like that was a movie that was inspiring people. It was using voices to inspire people to think. And then hopefully to action. But she also, you know, was standing at the podium alongside the great Cicely Tyson.
Yeah, she did. This was, in 2011. It was for the dedication of the MLK Memorial in D.C. Yeah. And I guess I know this is going to air a different point, but we happened to be talking on MLK's birthday. Today's the 15th.
So. Day 15th, that's right.
Right. So everything is synchronistically in alignment. I have always noticed that. Yes, yes, yes. I've been really blessed. We talked about vessels and conduits and teachers. We touched on all of that. And Amanla is, you know, embodies all of that for me. And yes. I was just reminded of, you know, when I gave birth to her, because I seem to always be singing. So when I gave birth to her, I had to have a planned C-section, which I was not unhappy about. And again, I started singing, and I remember, you know, my obstetrician probably thought, oh goodness, must be the drugs. But I knew it wasn't drugs. I knew it was God, because I started singing Bringing in the Sheaves, this old hymn. And I saw myself, you know, on a hillside. I was carrying this bundle, and all of these women dressed in these long flowing gowns were carrying bundles. And I joined that circle of women. And so that was my birth experience, having her.
Never heard of a birth experience like that in my life, ever.
Now, again, some might argue it was drug-induced. I say it was spirit-induced.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people who had some good drugs during birth, me included. And I was
have that one.
And I was not singing. Tell me, Karen, where can people find you?
Yes, you can find me at KarenBrailsford.com on my website. And I have links to where you can buy the book. It's available on Amazon and, you know, however else you like to buy the book. And what's fun about my website, yes, there's a lot about Sacred Landscapes of the Soul, but I also have fun things on the media page that harken back to my journalism days of interviewing celebrities. And so I think you addressed this a little bit, Laura, and we talked about, you know, these disparate parts of my being and different things I've done. And I actually see them as all being connected and all leading up to, I guess, wherever I am now and then wherever I will be a year from now. So yeah, there's all kinds of funny interviews and podcasts talking about the book, but then things going back in time, you know, like conversations with Spike Lee and all kinds of folks. So check out KarenBrailsford.com.
Yes, we will. And the book again is Sacred Landscapes of the Soul, Aligning with the Divine, Wherever You Are. Thank you for writing that book. Thank you for coming and talking to us. I just love you. And I so appreciate you. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you. I love you too. Thanks for having me. It's been such a pleasure and an honor. And how wonderful that, yes, we were nursing together and now we are being nurtured together.
Yes. And by dating you, I dated myself too. So just I'm in that together with you. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share, or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.